I'm Rechard van den Berg.
And I'm Duncan MacLeod.
This is Talk Central, episode 104 for the weekend starting Friday, 11 July 2014.
Talk Central is brought to you by Tech Central, where you'll find South Africa's best technology journalism. Look for us on Twitter at Tech Central.
On Google Plus at Plus Tech Central.
And on Facebook at Tech Central ZA.
On Talk Central this week, we talk about the disaster that is the SABC. We also look at new mobile payment player Zapper. And is Copper making a comeback?
As always, we pick the week's biggest winner and biggest loser, and Richard and I will pick our product or app of the week.
That's right, but first we need to pay the bills. We'll be back in just a moment.
Okay, I'm in. Just watch out for security. Don't worry about him, but let's drop this joint.
Avoid the hassles and costs of on-site guarding, and keep an eye on your business premises with Guardian Eye remote monitoring from Vox Telecom. We'll monitor your premises 24/7, utilizing your existing data link to keep costs down. You can remotely view and control access points from your smartphone or tablet. Guardian Eye from Vox Telecom, the visionary remote monitoring system for businesses. SMS your name to 31965 and we'll call you right back. Standard rates apply.
So welcome to the show. How's it, Richard?
How's it, Duncan?
Good, thanks. I think the SABC has to be the big story of the week. The appointment on a permanent basis of the very controversial Cloudy Motsoeneng as chief operating officer, going against very clearly the report of the public protector, which found some very serious things against him. Not least of which is the fact that he allegedly, I should say, lied about his qualifications, lied about the fact that he had a matric, and committed other alleged fraud while at the SABC, where he's been for the last 19 years. Mm. And the SABC board, effectively, with the Minister of Communications, Faith Matambi, probably with the direction of the President, have given a big middle finger to the public protector. And I think to the South African public as well, by appointing this guy.
Yeah, I mean, how many signs do you need for a person to show that they are probably not suitable for that position? And, you know, they've employed their own lawyers to look into this matter, independent lawyers, they said. But again, you know, we've got an independent public protector that's looking after these things. They're almost going too far to try and cover something up, I think.
Yeah, it's I don't know. This guy is clearly President Zuma's fixer at the SABC, and he wants him there. Chapter 9, independent institutions like the public protector be damned.
Mm.
And then Thuli Madonsela announced this week that she's going to instigate a new investigation, public protector investigation, into why this guy's appointment has been made permanent, and whether the SABC followed in due process in going about that. And it's just an absolute, it's a joke and it's a mess, and it'd actually be funny if it wasn't so serious.
Yeah, no, agreed. And then he made the, Cloudy Motsoeneng also said that he's going to continue with his pursuit of getting journalists to license the practice so shortly after his appointment. I think, you know, they're trying to steamroll something very quickly. Yeah.
Well, he repeated it this morning. In fact, the New Age newspaper said that he's going to approach, quoted him saying he's going to approach the communications minister, Faith Matambi, to ensure that journalists are licensed under some sort of regulation. A lot of people have pointed out quite rightly that perhaps the chief operating officer position at the SABC should at the very least require someone with a matric.
Yes, so, yes.
But yeah, what an absolute joke. I've been asked by the Sunday Times to write an extensive a piece on this for their review section this Sunday. So I spent the past day sort of thinking through the whole thing very carefully and putting my thoughts to paper. So look out for that in the Sunday Times this weekend. But yeah, let's move along. Richard, you've actually had a conversation with quite an interesting company this week, quite big backers behind them. A company called a new startup called Zapper, South African developed mobile payments solution that has actually gone international first before launching at home. Tell us a bit more about them.
Yeah, so Zapper, at first glance, it seems like yet another mobile payments application. What you do is you load the application, you load your cards, and then you can pay a bill at a restaurant, for example, via a QR tag. Now, we've seen similar technologies like SnapScan, which works well. You know, I've tried it a few times. It works very well. But what makes Zapier interesting is it's backed by this, the backers of the company. You know, it's Derivco, one of the backers of the company, or part of the group is Derivco, which is quite a big company.
So as I understand, it's the founder of Derivco, which is this big, Durban-based company, led by a guy called Michael Michel, who's also behind Zapier.
Yes. Now, what I think makes Zapier particularly interesting is that they are busy signing a couple of deals with some big restaurant chains locally and internationally. And the uptake of Zapier certainly seems to be slightly more dynamic than any of the other mobile payments we've seen in South Africa. It's a very interesting company. The application obviously looks great. It works well. But I think we could potentially see a new standard forming in mobile payments, specifically in South Africa, considering that they've already made such a big impact in international markets. They've got over 500 merchants and chains internationally using the application, and that already says a lot. And then we can also talk about the staff complement. They've got got 60 developers working on this, 100 people in South Africa alone working on Zapier. They certainly seem to be in business.
They do look interesting. They look very similar, though, to that product that Standard Bank launched recently, SnapScan, which won the MTN App of the Year award last year. So it looks like a head-on competitor to that. So interesting to see the space heating up and two players really going off to the same sort of market. The question is, why would you want to use this product? I know a couple of commenters on the site have made the point, you know, why not just haul out your credit card or your debit card and make a payment? Surely that's just as easy. Why bother to go through the process of loading your card details into this app and going through the process? I mean, let's just explain to people who are listening how it works. You go to a point of sale at a restaurant, for example.
No, even better than that. The restaurant brings you... So with what makes this different to many of the other applications, maybe let's start there.
Yeah.
Where SnapScan, what happens with SnapScan is you go up to a till, you scan the company, the business's QR tag, and then you enter the amount that you want to pay.
Mm.
With Zapier, what happens is the system is integrated with the point of sale that the business is using. So in a restaurant where they're rolling out first in South Africa, they will install the Zapier system onto an existing point of sale. And then what will happen is you will be brought your receipt that has a QR tag on it. Now, that QR tag already includes information on the price of the bill that you're going to be paying.
Right.
Now, that already is slightly different to SnapScan. So you scan and approve payment. With Zapier, you can also split bills, which is quite interesting if you use it in a restaurant. And also you can add the tip then, obviously. But the thing is, it's a lot more convenient because if you're just sitting having a meal at a restaurant, you don't have to walk up to the till to pay with SnapScan.
Well, you would do that anyway because you'd get a portable... speed point wireless terminal that you'd...
No, but I'm talking about SnapScan. So with SnapScan,
you'd probably walk up
to the point of sale to scan that code, and then or I guess they can bring you a QR tag too. But I think if you compare this to the traditional card payment systems we've got now, obviously fraud becomes less of an issue because you don't hand over your card to anybody else. You maintain, you approve the number, the amount that you're paying. So you're not leaving it up to somebody to enter that amount. We've heard the stories where somebody typed in a 1 or 0 in the wrong place. I certainly don't. It's probably the kind of thing that we would have been fine not having if in the world.
Yeah.
But it certainly is going to make a fraud less of an issue. It makes payments a lot easier. Another interesting feature is you can load two cards on, so a personal card and a business card. If I take somebody out for a business lunch, I just select the appropriate card that I want to pay with, scan, and all the invoices are stored in PDF, so those invoices can be sent through to the human resource department if they need to submit those claims. Look, it's going to be tough competition between the two. I think the real clincher is going to be the number of chains or restaurants or businesses that take up one of these formats, because you need one of the systems, obviously.
Yeah.
You almost get
the impression there's going to be a bit of a race now and maybe we even need to look at possible compatibility between these platforms at some point.
Yeah, I mean, if they're all based on QR tag systems, they technically should be able to work with each other.
Yeah.
But I don't see that much of an issue. At the end of the day, we've got lots of applications doing lots of things from chat to emailing.
That's true.
If I'm a Standard Bank customer and I use SnapScan, or you don't have to be a Standard Bank customer, I might want to use that as opposed to anything. But for me, it's critical uptake on the business side. If I know all the restaurants, all the businesses that I go to use Zapier.
The cloning thing is a big one. I've had my my card cloned at least twice at restaurants in the past few years, and it's a pain because you have to get your card cancelled, get a new one issued, get the bank to reverse all the fraudulent transactions if any took place on the card. It is painful. So if it can do away with that, then it's certainly going to help on that front.
Yes.
I was a bit amazed, by the way. I was I'm a keen trail runner, and I often go to these weekend events. At an event a couple of weeks ago, I was at they put up these stands where they sell shoes and food and all that sort of stuff, and I was amazed to discover that they were accepting SnapScan.
Oh, that's interesting. Yeah. That's very cool.
Which is very cool, because very often you're out at these things, there's a lot of people there, you leave your wallet in your boot, you haven't got money with you, but you do have your phone. You tend to carry your phone with you for emergencies, or you need to take pictures while you're out running.
Yes.
And so you've got your phone with you, you can buy a burry roll.
Nice. I do think if you look at the ease of use of both of these applications, even if you have two or three, I mean, obviously it would be nice to stick to one standard, but it's really no hassle to have two or three applications. You just press, because you're still going to have to load one of these applications to make your payment.
Yes.
I think the real shift in the industry is going to come when we start seeing these things integrate with NFC type technologies, where you just touch and go without launching or switching on your phone. Another thing that I thought was quite interesting from Zapier's point of view is the company seems to be quite keen to integrate this technology into more than just paying for goods and services at a restaurant or at a business.
Taxis, for example.
You could do your taxi payment, or even parking. That was quite interesting. Imagine your parking ticket prints out that QR code, and then when you sit in your car before you leave, you just quickly scan that, pay it, and then the system recognizes it. So by the time you put it into the machine at the boom, it knows that you've paid and it lets you out.
Well, that's cool.
That would be nice. Yeah.
So often, and these machines are awful. It always amazes me, in a country where there's such high unemployment, that all these shopping malls and everything have gone to these automated payment solutions, which are just a pain for their customers.
Yes.
I mean, I always end up getting to the parking machine, putting it in, opening up, discover I've only got 100 rand notes, and the machine only takes 10 and 20 rand notes.
Mm-hmm.
Or I've got a wallet bulging with 10 and 20 cent pieces that I want to get rid of, and the machine only doesn't take anything less than 1 rand coins. You know, it doesn't make any sense in a country with such high unemployment that we've gone for an automated solution in these parking lots.
Definitely. And if we look at the security aspect again, if I've got a phone with my application loaded, whether it's a Zapier type application or even beyond that, my phone number is generally associated with the phone number is associated with the person. That's quite secure in many ways if you look at our mobile technologies. And if that could be like a mobile payments, a mobile banking system, for argument's sake, if I have all of these things on my phone, and my phone is the device that keeps it secure to me, I'll be much happier to pay even overseas anywhere without having to let go of my card.
Mm-hmm. Great. Well, we're recording the show for the first time on the internet to a limited audience while we get it right, and we see Greg Malknet in the comments here on Hangouts saying here's a Zapier QR code in the wild from a local restaurant. So I'm just bringing it up here to have a look at it while we chat about this. But it's going to be interesting to see how quickly this sort of technology gets adopted amongst consumers, and whether people are concerned about security around these things and that sort of stuff. Interestingly, when I went to the launch of the, there we go, there's one in the wild, as they say. Unfortunately, we can't show this on the audio version of this podcast, but it looks pretty nifty.
QR code just inserted under the signature area on a still slip. Looks very interesting. You can also look on the article we did on Tech Central. We've got an example of a till slip there with the QR code.
Cool. So, security is an interesting one. When I went to the SnapScan launch, I was using a rooted Samsung Galaxy S4 at the time, and installed the app, and it warned me. It popped up this warning saying, we may disable access to this app in future because your device has been rooted. You use this at your own risk.
That's very interesting.
So I asked one of the techies at FireID, one of the developers behind it, and I said, should I be concerned about this? And he said, have you installed any dodgy applications on your device? Have you done anything that you shouldn't have done apart from rooting your phone? So I said no. He says no, it's fine, go for it.
Yeah, I think for techie that won't be a problem, but for average users, their phone probably won't be rooted.
Your average user's not going to root his phone, yeah, indeed.
And they won't have that exposure layer.
Indeed.
I also, a few weeks back, I spoke to a merchant that I normally go to in my neighborhood, and he uses SnapScan, and he told me what was quite interesting is that SnapScan or Standard Bank actually gives him a little low-cost turnaround phone on which he receives the SMSs for the payments. But he wasn't, I mean, he said even though he embraces technology and he loves to have another method of payment, he still prefers credit card systems because he, as an example, paid less interest on that particular thing.
The fees always come down to it, yeah. Interestingly, we published the, Zapper mentioned the fees that they charge or the maximum fee they charge. I think you said it was 2.75%.
Yeah, and that's negotiated, that can be low.
And that's negotiated, obviously, if you're going to a big retailer or something, or Nando's or something similar, you'll be able to negotiate a lower rate. I'd love to know what the banks actually charge on average.
Oh, it would be interesting. And also comparing these, because he for him, in his business, it certainly was better to do credit card than SnapScan. Although it was marginal, I mean, probably a few cents when it comes down to it. But I think if this technology will really have an immediate impact on those retailers or merchants that don't have credit card facilities, for argument's sake, and there's a lot of vendors like that, even vendors on the side of the street could now accept payment very easily just by printing out a QR code and accepting payment.
You of course need something at the point of sale as well to be able to print out these QR codes.
Well, with Zapper, yes, but I mean if with SnapScan you have a standard generic QR code that's just your business,
just print out from a regular printer.
So like this with SnapScan you would just have something generic at the point of sale.
Okay, cool. Excellent. Well, our last story of the week comes out of Bell Labs, which is now part of the whole Alcatel-Lucent stable. And Rachat, you had a look at this story. It's quite an interesting one about, we all talk about fiber to the home and how fiber is the future. But here these researchers, it must be said, in a very limited laboratory environment, have managed to squeeze some pretty impressive download speeds over copper. Which suggests that copper perhaps has a bit more life in it than we might have given it otherwise.
Yeah, definitely. I think a lot of people have already written off copper, saying fiber is the future. And yes, fiber is the future, don't get me wrong. It certainly allows a lot more flexibility in terms of connectivity speeds. But what Bell Labs have managed to do was, over a distance of 30 meters, it must be said, managed to transmit 10 gigabits per second of data, which is very interesting. Up till now, we thought we wouldn't be able to get more than a few megs or a few hundred megs at most. Even though this obviously is still in development, the company did say the technology will be available in 2015. So they're obviously very confident and very close to launching a feasible product. If they drop the speeds down to 1 gigabits per second, they can actually push it over a distance of 70 meters on a single copper pair. And that's another important factor.
This will be ideal copper as well, of course. And in the real world, a lot of copper is degraded.
Although they did say when they were doing the test, they were using copper that was standard being used out in the field.
Yeah.
So they didn't use brand new pure copper for maximum transfer speed. But yeah, very interesting technology. I think especially in terms of the last mile from a exchange or distribution box to a home, this could alleviate a lot of problems where people potentially can't or don't want to install fiber. This copper can be connected to the exchange or to the DSLAM, I think, and just take over that high capacity from that point. So you still need the fiber backhaul, but without having to then pull that fiber into your house, you just use the existing copper line, and then you'd be able to at least get much better than ADSL.
Yeah.
And like Ryan Hawthorne from Proboa, the guy behind Parkhurst's rollout of their fiber to the home project, he said to me that even if they get 100 megs over 200 meters, that's still fine. We don't necessarily need gigabit speed because your backhaul is still going to be the limiting factor. But I think it's quite exciting. It's at least another option once this technology becomes more mature. It's still another option.
So for those of us who are not getting home fiber anytime soon and your suburb isn't on Telkom's rollout list, perhaps here is a little bright light. Perhaps you'll be seeing some speeds beyond the 40 megs that VDSL is currently promising at some point in the future.
It's only a little bright light, though, because let's be honest, the Telkom still needs to unbundle those copper lines. They still need to open it up for other ISPs to use.
Well, that'll bring down prices and make the market more competitive. But if I could just get beyond 6 megs at home, I'd be quite happy, to be honest.
I agree.
But it's an interesting one, interesting development in the world of copper, and suggests that the technology has some legs left in it, and perhaps if they can deliver this technology in the real world, sort of to the 100 plus megabit per second sort of speeds that people are talking about fiber already, then perhaps perhaps it won't become so urgent for the deployment of fiber into homes.
Yeah, exactly. And then we can make use of that while fiber deployments are happening in those neighborhoods that actually do require need.
Of course, fiber is still a better technology. It's more reliable. It doesn't suffer from the line noise and attenuation that you get on copper-based DSL systems.
And it doesn't have any value attached to it, really. So if somebody can't steal and sell their fiber,
And of course, on fiber, you can do dense wave division multiplexing, which allows you to really start to crank up those speeds to beyond a gig to 10 gig, probably to 100 gig next, and who knows where in the future.
But I think you raise a valid point. With South Africa's many degraded copper lines we have, fiber is still going to be the answer to our problems.
Cool. Well, I think it's time to move on to our weekly features. Let's start with our winner and loser, as we always do, Rachat. I think we had a bit of a debate this morning about who we choose for our winner. And I think it's we had a bit of debate about whether to choose this particular gentleman as our winner this week or not, because there's a little bit of controversy about what he's doing. But I think our winner this week is the Gauteng Premier, David Makura, who has announced this week that the panel is going to review the whole much-hated e-tolls system up here in Gauteng. We say we were a little reluctant to pick him because the Gauteng province actually doesn't have the final say-so in whether this project is going to get scrapped or not. That's up to the National Department of Transport. But I think it's good that that he's raised this issue and effectively challenging his own party's position on it.
Yes, yes.
Of course, he's playing politics. He's a politician. The DA, or rather the ANC, came very close to losing, or at least reaching less than 50% of the vote in Gauteng in the last in the general election back in April, May the 7th. And with the local government elections coming in 2016, I think that's probably focusing his mind quite a lot, because there's a very real chance that the ANC will get less than 50% in the next election. And e-tolls is no doubt one of the big issues that is exercising the minds of voters. So no doubt this is a political play. But I think it's to be welcomed that there is a review that's going to happen. Let's just hope it's not meaningless and that something concrete is going to come out of it, and that the national government will listen to whatever recommendations this provincial-led committee or work group recommends.
Yeah, definitely. And at least they're still keeping the conversation alive after debate. I think that's the important thing. People need to know that this is not a done and dusted matter. Yeah. There's still resistance to that.
So at least there's a debate that's happening. And while he may be playing politics, we reluctantly choose David Makura as our winner this week. So well done, Mr. Makura. Our losers of this week, we picked, I think it was just last week, that we picked Claudio Motsoeneng as our loser of the week. It's going to be quite easy to pick him again. But actually, in kind of a way, he's a winner. He's been appointed to the position permanently of Chief Operating Officer. So instead, our losers this week, related to that story, are the Communications Minister, Faith Mutambi, and the chairman of the SABC, Zandile Chabalala.
Definitely.
Both of whom have exercised their powers in ensuring this man, who is wholly unsuitable for the job, has been appointed permanently to the position. So for that, and for their obfuscation around it, Faith Mutambi, the communications minister, and Zandile Chabalala, the chairperson of the SABC board, are joint losers of the week. Time for our picks of the week. What have you got this week, Rachat?
So the pick that I've got is kind of an add-on to something I picked a few weeks ago, is the Google Chromecast, which is a nifty little USB dongle that you plug into your TV's USB port, and that allows you to, with certain apps in Google or on Google Apps, certain Google Apps on iOS platform as well, allow you to stream or screencast any application, or like YouTube, for example. You can throw that onto the screen. I say throw because you flick a switch, and then whatever was displaying on your screen, your YouTube video, will display on your TV. So what they've done now is they've added a new functionality to Chromecast that allows you to mirror your screen. So it's the normal Chromecast app, so you can still do the usual stuff of sending an application's content to the screen. But what they've enabled now is to mirror your screen outright. So it's obviously great for presentation type uses, but I can now, with the use of the Chromecast dongle, mirror anything that's on my screen, and it will be full resolution. So if I hold my screen up in landscape mode, it will display on the screen in landscape mode, which is great if I want to show off a function or feature. But what I use it for is flip my phone into landscape mode. It does the same on the TV, and then it's just much easier to then browse any content, whether it's reading mails, checking Facebook and Twitter, or even watching videos that is.
You know, what I find that most useful is I take a lot of pictures with my camera. The most useful is you want to show a friend or a family member some of the pictures you took at last week's trail run, for example. Just throw them up on the TV. It's much nicer than looking at it on a small screen.
That is a great use for it. I agree. It's very handy. It's very quick to use. You do need the Chromecast dongle, though, and you need to update your app. But the Chromecast application with the added feature of sharing your screen is my pick.
Yeah, I must do that. I must admit I do that already with my devices. I have an LG TV and now I have an LG G3 smartphone. And it's so easy. I just simply throw whatever I want up on the screen. And I'm not sure what technology it uses. I haven't looked into that. But there are a range of them available. I think it may use Miracast or one of those.
Yes.
It could be some LG proprietary technology. But
so TV's got it built in, the functionality.
It's got it built in, yeah. Okay, I think most modern TVs do have that functionality either. I know Sony TVs have them built in. I don't think it's all universal at the moment because you can't get every device to interact with every other device. But if you've got a Sony phone and a Sony TV, or an LG phone and an LG TV, or a Samsung phone and a Samsung TV, it's fairly easy.
You need one of the new TVs. I mean, mine is 5-6 years old. It's an LCD, but it's got one USB port, and this is a perfect solution for that.
Yeah. As Greg in our Hangouts forum says, Miracast is now standard, also built into new Windows Phone 8 devices. So there you go.
Oh, nice.
Cool. My pick of the week is actually not a product or an app for a change. It's actually a TV show, and I just finished watching it last night. And that's a new show made by Mike Drudge, who the creator of Beavis and Butthead. Don't let that put you off. It's a brilliant new comedy show called Silicon Valley. I know you've seen the first two or three episodes of it. I finished last night. It's the first season's 8 episodes, and it's been what do they call it? They've commissioned a second season.
Oh yeah.
And it's a really funny show set in Silicon Valley about a small startup that's developed this amazing compression technology. It's a wonderful insight, I think, into the culture of Silicon Valley and how it works. Sure, it's taking a piss a lot of the time, and it's a bit over the top. It is definitely over the top, but it's hugely entertaining and genuinely very funny. So anyone who hasn't watched the show yet, you're missing out if you haven't seen it.
Yeah. I second that.
I particularly like a scene where I won't give away too much, but there's a wonderful scene, I think, in the fifth or sixth episode, where the geeky accountant who works at the company gets picked up in a driverless car, obviously a ripper for the Google driverless cars, and he gets taken on a bit of an adventure. One of the funniest scenes I've seen in television in quite a long time, so look out for that. But it's called Silicon Valley. It's just broadcast in the States, so you'll probably have to get it through, other means. But I'm sure it'll come to DSTV soon enough. So that's Silicon Valley, the new TV show by Mike Judge, very, very well, highly recommended. So go check it out. Good. Well, that's all we have for this week. As always, if you've got any feedback on the show, please send us an email at info@techcentral.co.za. Until next time, enjoy the weekend. Cheers.
Ciao, ciao.